Welcome back, or welcome for the first time, to Relatively Football. My name is Theo Lloyd-Hughes. I am here with my sister, Flo. How's it going, Flo, all the way from London?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
You doing all right? Good week so far?
Yeah, been okay week. Yeah, can't complain. Been doing some puzzles, been watching some telly, been just taking it easy. Lockdown 2 doesn't feel like lockdown 1, which is a good thing. It does feel different.
Better than the original, the sequel.
Yeah, but the sequel is so much better. I couldn't recommend the sequel enough. New writing team came in and really shook things up. But yeah, I think there was a kind of shock and a weirdness and an uncertainty to lockdown 1. But I was talking to a colleague today and she made a good point. It's like, we've been through it before now, so we kind of know what to expect. And also there's more open now. People are going outside, they're going to parks. So it feels like there's more life. Whereas before it was a ghost town for a while. So it's certainly easier to get through. But I'm sure there's lots of other people who disagree and are really, you know, struggling. So can't complain though.
Do reach out to resources if you are struggling out there. And remember, you're definitely not alone. And if you are going out there, like Flo said, and not making it a ghost town, make sure you wear a mask. One of the big differences between lockdown 1 and lockdown 2, as you alluded to, Flo, is we have football. And
yes.
No women's football is being curtailed this time. So we are going to preview on this Relatively Football podcast the women's football weekend, which is the big weekend this weekend where there's no men's football of any domestic note, and everyone will get nice staggered kickoffs and lots of spotlight for the fantastic quality on show in the Women's Super League. Flo, what does Women's Football Weekend mean to you?
Yeah, so it's a recent thing that I think the FA had been thinking about for a while because of the success of non-league weekend in England, which was set up and it was all about giving profile and getting more fans going to non-league grounds. And it's a really successful initiative that's been going for a while now, and it was always targeted at the men's football international break. So it's a similar sort of thing that the FA's gone for. I think it's only the second year they've done it. They did it last year, which was the first year, and it was really successful. And obviously we were lucky enough to have fans going this time. It's obviously going to be different because we don't have fans, and part of the point was getting fans there. But I think it's good that they've continued it because so much of this is about momentum. And I think we often see things sort of start and stop. So this is good that they've had the intention of spending a bit of money. But last year, the marketing spend was huge for the clubs because it was so targeted about selling tickets. So it's a different sort of thing this year. I'm not really sure what sort of marketing and initiatives the clubs are doing because it's all going to be about TV and the FA player and perhaps other press and bits and pieces. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and I think embrace the differences this year, people. You know, if you were lucky enough to get to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium or Stamford Bridge last year, maybe this time have a Zoom with close friends and fellow fans and Zoom watch the game, or, you know, tell people about it, get people to sign up for the FA player and stream games, or, you know, the first game we're going to talk about is going to be free on YouTube, or share your BT Sport password if you're into that kind of thing.
Yeah, please do, because I don't have BT Sport, so slide into the DMs. I would quite like a password. So I'm thinking about getting it, but that's another £25 I don't want to spend.
Relatively Football sponsorships are available
yeah,
on our website.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think let's make this the best TV living room lockdown version of Women's Football Weekend and roll back into the stadiums come 2021. So without any further ado, let's move on. We're going to go in chronological order with the first and maybe biggest game of the weekend on Saturday. It's a lunchtime kickoff in Manchester. It's the Manchester Derby, top of the table, Man United versus Man City, 12:30 p.m. in the UK, 7:30 a.m. on the East Coast, United States. A nice 10:30 p.m. nighttime kickoff in Australia. So as we alluded to, this game will be on BT Sport, NBC Sports Network in the US, Optus in Australia, but it's going to be free on YouTube, so just find the BT Sport YouTube channel and you should be able to stream there, no problems. Flo, what jumps out to you on this massive match?
First of all, I'm really gutted about the early kickoff for the Americans because...
Tough one for the West Coast, 4 a.m. in the West Coast. Pour one out for San Francisco.
You've got some big US women's national team names in this game. Heath, Press... Mewis, Lavelle, And that's an early one for them. So
if you're up at 4:30 in the morning on the Pacific West Coast and you listen to Relatively Football, send us a photo of your setup and we'll send you a goodie bag.
Yeah, a goodie bag which will be some leftover M&Ms, souvenir
secondhand
mug.
Secondhand puzzle, Flo, that you've already completed.
Oh, yeah, secondhand puzzle. I could give you that. And a picture of me from 2009 wearing a football shirt. We'll figure it out. But yeah, the time difference is especially tricky for those guys. So hats off to those that will be getting up. But oh my God, it's such an exciting fixture. Oh, I really like the way, and you know, we have to give credit to the FA because it's been an especially tough sort of 10-14 days for people who work there, which we'll probably get onto later. But for those that work on the women's game there who are pushing this, the fixture list that they've sorted out both in the WSL and the Championship for this weekend is mega. We've got so many derbies, of which this is one of them, and I'm so excited. I think Man United are going to win, which will be big. Back-to-back big three wins for Casey Stoney. Their fan base is going to be very hyped and getting very excited for the potential of this team this season. I'm excited. I'm so excited.
They've never beaten City in the WSL. Obviously, they only have the one fixture from last year, losing 1-0 on the opening day of the season, thanks to Caroline Weir breaking the deadlock that day.
They never got the repeat fixture.
Yeah. Exactly. Wow. So this has been sort of a dormant rivalry, but obviously a heated one with City's rise in the WSL in the 20 teens. So how do you think that's going to play into Casey Stoney's mindset or the team's mindset? You saw how relentless and persistent and how great the press did against upsetting Arsenal, you know, upsetting the kind of quote unquote top three. You know, she has her first top three win. Do you think there's a different kind of big sister element with Man City, or do you think you set up the same way, you go at them?
I think it's a real status thing for United now, because they will feel like they belong amongst the big boys with that win last weekend and with the players they've got now. And I think that will really help them in this, because I think there'll be an arrogance and a confidence to them that they haven't necessarily had before. They won't really be considered as much of an underdog anymore, especially with their form this season compared to what City have had to deal with a little bit in some of the games this season. So I think they'll be going in confidence mega high. It's just fans would have played a big part of this, because the Barmy Army Man United fans are big. They're, you know, some of the most passionate in the WSL, very loud. A fan base that is working hard to try and bring some of the atmosphere that we see in men's football over to the WSL. So I think it's a shame, because they're quite an influential crowd, and to not have that will be difficult. But I still favour United in this, and I think they'll win. I hope we'll get loads of goals though. I'm thinking maybe like 3-2 United.
Do you think City will make any adjustments at the back? We saw Gemma Bonner get undone by a bit of high press from Ebony Salmon on the weekend. Do you think Bonner keeps her place, knowing that United are going to come after the centre-backs on the ball? I mean, I would argue that Alex Greenwood might lose her place, a player who likes to play it out and take a lot of time on the ball at the back. I think we'll see Demi Stokes at left-back, but who do you think City start centre-back? I know this is our favourite thing to discuss on the podcast.
I won't be taking comments about Gemma Bonner at this time. It's a difficult time for us all. No, I'm joking. I think stick to what you know. Do not experiment with this. Now, it's mucked around a bit because it's not necessarily an experiment anymore, because he's done it quite a few times. But I would go for your solid pairing, tried and tested. Bonner, Horton, Stokes at left back, Bronze at right back. Happy days.
I think the biggest matchup on this one to watch, people who will be tuning into this, is the University of North Carolina head-to-head matchup. Tobin Heath at left midfield, Lucy Bronze at right back. Who wins that duel? Keep an eye on that. Anything else you want to add?
Tar Heels, baby, and Russo. Oh no,
Russo's out
injured.
With a hamstring.
She's having hamstring surgery. No.
I know.
That's sad.
I know.
That's really sad.
Yeah, it's actually back-to-back UNC left midfield, right back duels, because centre-back Lotta Woodman-Moy is also a Tar Heel, and she was played at right back by Arsenal last weekend. So Heath is just going against a lot of alumni.
Bit of a reunion.
Bit of a constant reunion in the WSL. So let's move on from one derby in the Northwest to another in the Midlands. Villa are hosting Birmingham in another kind of you know, dormant rivalry. We've seen Birmingham historically be one of the best teams in women's football in England, and here are Villa on the rise, you could argue more funded, more potential than Birmingham at this moment in time. I think we're going to see, you know, another kind of reputation versus potential kind of derby here. This is 2:30 in the UK, 9:30 on the East Coast United States, and just after midnight down under. This one is on the FA Player wherever you are. Flo, what jumps out to you on this one?
I want some nastiness. I want some spice, because Midlands derbies, whether it's Villa Birmingham, Villa Wolves, Villa West Brom, Birmingham West Brom, whatever it may be, always good derbies, always spicy, always great crowds, tension, drama. So even though there's no crowds to create that, I want that. I want a bit of, you know, trash talking from Carla Ward and Gemma Davies, whatever that might be for them, because they're both pretty classy coaches. But I want a bit of that, and I know the fans want that too. So I hope we see some of that. I hope we see a little bit of pushing and shoving. I hope we, you know, see some cards come out. That's what I want from this derby, because it has the makings, if Villa stick around in this division, of a really exciting little growing rivalry as Birmingham, you know, slide down a little bit in terms of their history, like you said. But, you know, they can create something now with this. And I'm really excited. I think Birmingham will win, because I think they're a better team at the moment. And what we've seen, I've seen a lot more, you know, positivity from them than Villa this season. But I want a bit of that kind of shit house from Villa, because I think Villa will need to do that if they're going to get a result here. So Anitra Asante, sharpen your nails, because I want to see a bit of a fight.
I watched the Villa rescheduled Villa versus Coventry match last night, because I don't have anything better to do. Villa won 9-0, but it's interesting you talk about the kind of West Midlands second city rivalries, because in the chat, on the game was streamed free on YouTube. Thank you, Coventry United. We appreciate the Conti Cup streams. In the chat box, it was kicking off between Villa fans and Coventry United fans.
I live for it.
It was kind of wild. I was like, this is a 9-0 midweek Conti Cup game.
And Tinpot.
People are trolling each other in this, you know, bringing up like all sorts. Villa looked great in that game. It was a bit of a, you know, as you can imagine from the scoreline, incredibly one-sided. And Olivia Clark, who was the backup goalie drafted in after Sue Wood was out with an illness in goal for Coventry, was absolutely fantastic. Made a lot of spectacular saves for Coventry. And really, it could have been more than 9-0, which really says something. Notable, Nadine Hassan scored a hat-trick in the first 30 minutes, making it look very easy. And a lot of these goals came from the left-hand side, where Diana Silva was actually playing as more of a midfield role. And she got her first two goals in Villa colours. So I think we're seeing Villa getting their shooting boots on. I might disagree with you a little bit on this one, in that, like, I think Birmingham remind me a little bit of Brighton. And what we saw on the weekend is that if you don't create too many chances, Villa will grow in confidence. And it's going to be interesting to see. They've had a bit more rest than Birmingham over the season. They have a slightly deeper squad. They have more players. Maybe they've got a little bit more confidence after their first win of the season and then the Coventry result. I think you might see Villa try and, again, hold out for the first 30 minutes and then really hit that second half. Diana Silva didn't start on the weekend against Brighton, and maybe she'll be another second half substitute to try and turn the screw. I love Carla Ward. I love Gemma Davies. These are probably my second and third favourite managers in the league after Hope Powell. So I agree. It's really one to see the kind of great managers locking heads. And I think it could
be really great, young, exciting managers too. Like, you know, potentially the next England manager of the future, some of these people that we're seeing now, really highly rated young coaches. And I think that's really exciting as well, to see how they're going to, you know, potentially try and outwit each other.
Moving on to the next fixture on Saturday, we're getting into the late afternoon now. It's the 4:30 p.m. in the UK kickoff, 11:30 on the East Coast United States, just after 2 a.m. in Australia. And this one is another one which is going to be on BBC Red Button, FA Player in the UK. And then I think you're going to have to get on the NBC app in the US. Do check FA Player on this one, but I'm worried it's going to be behind a paywall. Definitely check Atta Football as well. But I believe Atta Football will be streaming the game after it has concluded. But don't take my word for that. Check on the day. You're talking about managers outwitting. Willie Kirk definitely looked pretty miffed after the Chelsea game and was saying that the score didn't reflect the result. I would disagree. I think you know, 4-0 was harsh, but Chelsea were very good in front of goal. How do you think he can try and rally Everton? You know, we're not sure if Govan and Lucy Graham are going to play. They look a bit, you know, maybe low on morale, low on squad depth. Do you think Reading can outwit them in this one? Or do you think it's going to be a return to form for the Everton we know from September, October?
I think it's a really interesting one because you would say Everton are perhaps on a bit of a slump. And is the FA Cup defeat the start of a poor run for them and a difficult period for them? And it is tricky, and that the Govan injury has clearly had a fairly big impact on them. Yes, they had to play Chelsea, probably best team in the league, and everyone's favourites for the title. But it's tricky because that is a real confidence knock, especially with the mistake that McIver made. Although she recovered pretty well and made some good saves, that would have dented them. They've lost their centre-back, Savecki. I don't know if she's going to be fit for this, if she's going to be back. It depends on how bad her concussion is and if she has to take a few weeks out, sometimes even longer. So I think it's going to be tricky. I mean, Reading is so unpredictable. So it depends sort of which Reading turns up a little bit. They've got all the tools, but they can just be a little bit all over the place sometimes. But they've had a string of, you know, fairly decent results. So I think it's going to be a really tricky one. I'm going to go for the draw in this. 1-0, 2-0, I think.
Yeah, my gut says 0-0. I think Jess Fishlock, and with Chaplin and Carter ahead of her, showed that the, you know, Reading, for whatever you think about maybe their style of play or the amount of quality they have in depth, they really are up for the fight. And I think Fishlock, who actually led the entire league with 9 interceptions against Spurs on the weekend, I think is really good at winning the ball back and being direct on the counter-attack. And I think it's going to ask a lot of, like you said, you know, who comes in to play at centre-back for Everton. And Everton, you know, without Govan and Lucy Graham, that's a combined 7 goals you're taking out of the team, and they've only scored 16 this year. So that's, you know, nearly half your team's goals, you know, might not turn up on the weekend. So I think chances, this game is going to come down to 1 or 2 chances. And do you trust McGill to take them? Or Sorensen, you know, who I think actually has been one of the best signs of the season, but definitely when you don't have a presence like Govan, takes a lot more, you know, a lot more players mark her. So I think it's going to be an interesting game because I think it's going to be on a knife's edge. And I think Reading have shown that they're resolute in these close games. They got the point against City. They weren't great against Spurs, but they didn't let Spurs overrun them. They got beat on a set piece. So I think the physicality is really going to come through for Reading. And yeah, I definitely see this being probably a 0-0 for me. The last game on Saturday is maybe, weirdly, my second favourite game of the Women's Football Weekend. I think this is absolutely fascinating because we're seeing a mixture of investment versus, you know, academy players, essentially, you know, big budgets versus small budgets, press, you know, media attention versus lack of media attention. It is 11th place Tottenham Hotspur versus 12th place Bristol City. And it is a late, lovely kind of after tea time kickoff, 6:30 in the UK, 1:30 on the East Coast United States, and tough one down under, but 4:30 a.m. in Australia. And this one is going to be on the FA Player wherever you are. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. And I'm really excited because for me, Bristol, who've had a tough start to the season but played a lot of hard teams, arguably they lost 4-0 to Birmingham City, and that's probably the only game where you go, okay, maybe they should have done better. But this, for me, is Bristol have to get a point. They cannot wake up on Sunday and just still have 0 points on the league table. And Spurs are gettable. We've said that a lot this season. Like, that, you know, they plod through games. They don't do very well in the last 30 minutes of games. I think they also, I was looking at some of the stats, these teams are very similar in a lot of their kind of stats over 90 minutes. So XG per 90 minutes, Spurs average 0.7, Bristol have 0.5. That's ranking 10th and 12th in the league. Shots per game, 2.8 for Spurs, 1.8 for Bristol, 9th and 12th in the league. Shots to goal conversion, Spurs are actually less than Bristol with 18% to 22%. And they're ranked 11th and 12th for passing as well with 69 and 65%. So in a way, you could argue these are the two lowest quality sides. And I think Bristol, if they really play it well with these young academy players like 16-year-old Naomi Lazel coming through, who could be playing at centre-back against Alex Morgan, is a point or an upset too crazy, Flo?
No, not at all. I think they'll be looking at this and really seeing a way to get some points on the board finally. They're up against it a little bit with the situation with the players, and I don't think we're quite sure about who since then is actually tested positive since the incident with the players having to isolate. I was working on a show on Monday on TalkSport, and Jess Fishlock was saying that results for tests come back for Reading within 24 hours sometimes. So she was surprised that they hadn't been able to find a decisive yes or no, but it depends obviously when, you know, those players might have woken up on the day and felt unwell, or it might have been the night before and there wasn't time. But yeah, it's a very interesting one. So I imagine some of the players who isolated will be okay to come back if they haven't tested positive, but we're still sort of unsure. And the FA have literally just sent their weekly COVID test email, which says that 8 players across the WSL and the Championship have tested positive, but they don't tell you who or from which club. You can obviously go and ask the clubs, and they might share the information, and often they do with journalists, and they say, you know, they'll have to obviously announce their teams, and then they sometimes also say it's because they've got COVID or whatever it may be. So yeah, it's going to be interesting which Bristol City can turn up. But I think Spurs as well, if they drop points against a Bristol City side that's potentially turning up with a bunch of teenagers, that's not a good look, really, is it?
But that's why we watch the game. Like, for me, yeah, this is why this game is so tantalizing. You have a World Cup winner, someone with over 3 million Instagram followers, the face of many a women's football, you know, along with Megan Rapinoe in the United States / the world. And then you've got a bunch of teenagers plucked up from the academy in a pandemic against a team with a lot less funding to try and upset them. And I think that's why we watch football, to see how small these margins are against kind of greatness versus grassroots. On that note, Shahan from the Vixen podcast out of Bristol says, if a team has multiple players that need to self-isolate as a precaution, would their team still have to play? Is a question he wanted answered on the pod. Very tongue-in-cheek. We love it. What do you think, Flo? If in a crazy world, the team had some players who needed to precaution, do you think you'd get the game postponed?
If I made the rules, and let me tell you, it would be a very different world we would live in if I made the rules in this place, they would not be having to play because we're in the middle of a global pandemic and it's better to be safe than sorry, and you should be rewarded for sticking to the rules rather than breaking them. But I don't make the rules, sadly, and it's out of my hands. But don't you worry, once I am director of women's and girls football at the FA, I will be making all sorts of decisions. Don't you worry about that.
I think if Alex Morgan was exposed to someone with COVID, the game would be called off.
They'd be locking it down straight away.
Yeah, I hate to be the bearer of bad
news. Secret Service would be coming in, and there'd be a helicopter, Commander-in-Chief, taking
mate.
Her out. Yeah, taking her. Air Force One would be popping.
I'm pretty
by.
Sure I saw the snipers on top of the Hive Stadium. So. Yeah, my final point on this would be, look, Bristol, go back, watch the
chin
video
up.
Chin up, watch the videotape, Siri Vorm corners.
Yeah.
Keep
all you need to do.
That's all you need
defend
to do.
Them.
Defend the Siri Vorm corners. Yeah. You've got a game on your hands. All right, Bristol? Prove me right. Hopping over to Sunday now. This is where it continues. This week, this weekend has so many great games. 9th place versus 8th place, chef's kiss. Another lunchtime kickoff, 12:30 UK, 7:30 East Coast, 10:30 PM down under. Welcome back, Australia. This game is going to be on FA Player in certain regions, but watch out, Americans and maybe Aussies for Optus Sport. I think NBC has put this game on their online package with the Premier League not being on this weekend. So watch out there, Americans. This is West Ham at home versus Brighton. Flo, no Hope Pal again, who is isolating because of COVID. I mean, interesting. I think a couple of weeks ago we would have said this, you know, Brighton at home can definitely take care of West Ham, but you know, definitely different fortunes. West Ham got 2 wins last week, Brighton had a game postponed because of COVID, no manager, and they lose against Villa. Also, the last thing I want to set you up with here is last season West Ham did the double over Brighton, and actually in the season before that they split the game. So this is a team that West Ham have traditionally got the better of, and Brighton are turning up a little bit wounded. So how do you see this one going?
I think they're two very different teams. That's the situation compared to last year, because you talked about West Ham doing the double. The trajectory of both those sides has been very different. Brighton kind of on the up until the weekend, which was really disappointing for them. And West Ham really on a downer. They managed to claim it back against Birmingham, but it wasn't a convincing performance at all. And I think, I don't know if Brighton have enough firepower, can score enough goals to get all 3 points in this, but I think they can get a point. I think West Ham are scoring more goals, which is really important for them because, you know, that's their talents. They've got good attacking players.
Well, and on that note, you know, West Ham had the second best defence in the league after, sorry, the second worst defence in the league after Bristol.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely
after
not.
Bristol City. So, like, West Ham, you know, they're conceding 3 goals a game on average. So you talk about that attack has to balance out that defence.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I'm going to go for sort of 1-all, 2-all in this. Okay.
I was going to say that I think Alicia Lehmann has had a really mixed season, which kind of backs up what you're saying about, like, these West Ham players just seem to flip kind of back and forth form-wise. She scored 3 times in the 2 wins over Brighton last season, so I think she's going to be a player to watch. And, you know, West Ham do play with a lot of width and a lot of attackers, which Brighton have struggled to take advantage of the space, at least last weekend, with what's given to them. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if West Ham are as outright attacking as they seemingly want to be. Like you said, will West Ham give up a lot of space, give up a lot of chances by attacking so much? Or will they kind of get the goals and put the game to bed like we saw last season? I think Maya Letizia is one of my favourite Brighton players to keep an eye out for. She's had a great season so far, and she's going to be going up against these wide attackers, which could be Lehmann, could be Lyon, could be Rachel Daly. So keep an eye on that. I think the wide areas is really where this game is going to be won and lost. And hopefully I think Brighton should bring back Rebecca Stott, who hasn't been playing, not 100% sure why, but I think just solidifying from the back is the Brighton way, even without Hope Powell for me. You know, try and get 0-0, 70, 80 minutes inside this game and really try and make West Ham crumble under the pressure, because I think West Ham will keep throwing players on.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. And the final game of the weekend, Flo, I know this is the one that you are maybe most excited about, being in London, being around a lot of fans of both these teams. It is the second versus third, Arsenal versus Chelsea. We've seen it a lot. It's a bit of a classic. 2:30 p.m. kickoff in the UK, 9:30 East Coast, just after midnight in Australia. And this game will be on BT Sport and NBC Network. Sadly, not on YouTube, so please share those passwords. Arsenal reeling from losing top spot and losing for the first time ever against Manchester United last weekend. How do they respond against Chelsea side they traditionally do not do very well against?
I would actually say I'm not actually that excited for this game because...
Excuse me, I spoke too soon.
How dare you? Correct dare that. I. Correction.
London. This is
show.
The opposite of London bias. Somebody put this out there.
Because the reason is because Arsenal look like a wounded animal right now. And I do have a soft spot for Arsenal. I live down the road from the Emirates. Loads of friends that are Arsenal fans. Family that are Arsenal fans. Boyfriend that's an Arsenal fan, love Vivian Miedema, love so many of their players, love the way they play football. And I just think they're going to get absolutely destroyed on the weekend. And I think that's why I'm worried. I'm worried about this is the start of a, you know, bad period for Arsenal. I think there's positive signs, the fact that Little and Raud came on at halftime-ish last weekend. But I'm still concerned about how poor they were against United, about how United dominated the whole game and it was just onslaught after onslaught, apart from maybe a sort of 10-15 minute period where Arsenal sort of slowly got back into it. And just with the firepower Chelsea have and the way that they dominate games, the way that they dominated that game against Everton and the relentless attacking that they will bring, I'm a little bit worried about how Arsenal are going to cope with it, even if Raud and Little are back into that midfield to bring a bit of strength and creativity. I think Miedema will get better supply if that happens. But I'm concerned with, you know, the defence at the moment and the vulnerability there. And I think it could be like 4-1.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal, that was the score last year as well. Arsenal haven't beaten Chelsea since October 2018 in the league, and it's I think become a bit of a running gag, or maybe gag's the wrong word, but you know, Montemurro said after the United game, he was asked about
injuries
No, he was asked about the upcoming Chelsea fixture. And he said, each adventure against Chelsea seems to be the same story, and I'm not going to make any excuses in advance. So Montemurro, who's usually quite spiky anyway, I think is already predicting that this is going to be a game that's going to kind of test his mettle. Because
their record hasn't been great against them. And I mean, there was that one game at the start, or towards the start of last season, was it when Arsenal won 5-0, I think, at King's Meadow?
That's the season before the 18-19.
Before when Arsenal...
So that's their last win.
Yeah, won 5-0 at King's Meadow. And that, I think, was had a big impact on Emma Hayes. And there was sort of a, we're never going to let this happen again moment for her and her players, of which some have left since then. But it was a real, like, embarrassment against a team that won that year, but a team that was very good and are still, that core team is still together, but how the tables have turned. And ever since then, it's sort of been one-way traffic. And I really think Arsenal are going to struggle.
Well, do you think, I like the way you talked about that 5-0 loss to Arsenal back in 2018 as a kind of like, let's get things right in this club and what it means to be a part of this team. Do you think the 1-0 against United could be that for Montemurro? Or do you think that's jumping and, you know, making too much out of that?
I don't think we're at that stage yet, but I think back-to-back defeats will be worrying for him. But he, with the injury situation, there's not much he can do, and he likes having his core tight squad. But perhaps in January, he will look to potentially bring in some more reinforcements. But it'll be interesting given how other leagues will be getting going again, and there won't be maybe as much of an attraction for players to come to WSL for the season, because they'll say, oh, well, I can, you know, play in America, or I can play elsewhere in Europe. But I think there's still that appeal for them.
The Chelsea double pivot, Ingle and Loopholes, were so fantastic against Everton, broke up the midfield, kept turning the ball over, dominated the game. Ladd and Cronin did the same thing to Arsenal the weekend before. How do you think
I love the way you say Jackie Cronin. She's Spanish now.
No, I think that's the Dutch pronunciation. Any Dutch listeners get... I think it's Cronin.
No idea.
Come back to me, Dutch listeners. Do you think they do what Ladd and Jackie did? Or do you think Montemurro tries to maybe get Leah Williamson to play out the back quicker, since Berger not to play it from the back as much? Is there any way Montemurro... I know you're predicting Arsenal demolishment, but like, let's think outside the box. Do you think he'll try and do anything different? Or are we going to see kind of Cuthbert destroyed Bronze on the high press in that Man City game? And are we going to see the same Cuthbert performance against Arsenal?
I think it will be about that press. It will be about if Arsenal get pegged back, and they get pegged back really early and they get pinned in, which is exactly what Chelsea did against City, and didn't really give City any chance to play what the football they sort of wanted to play. Every single time they got the ball, they just booted it up. And I think we'll see more of that from Chelsea, that really high press, really high intensity to put pressure on Arsenal and kind of overwhelm them. But I think Leah Williamson will be key, and she is often very key for Arsenal. But I think if she can play the ball out of defence or step forward into midfield, which is what so many people love to see her do, then that will ease the pressure a little bit, and she'll be able to play the ball out well. She's good with the ball at her feet, and hopefully they'll be able to counter-attack quickly, or, you know, that Arsenal have talented players who can deliver good long balls into Miedemar, or good diagonal passes into Miedemar, so that will help them. Because it's not, with City, they don't really have someone who can do that. They're much better on the floor. So I think if Arsenal can utilise that, then that will help alleviate some of that pressure when they don't have space.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think something which has gone slightly under the radar is that Chelsea have the best defence in the league and have only conceded 2 goals. Berger, Mjelde, Bright, Eriksen and Anderson have played almost every game, with just Hannah Blundell replacing Anderson in the Bristol game. So you've got this really solid back four and keeper. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about Miedemar this season, but she hasn't necessarily shown up in the big games, in the cups and against United last weekend. So I think it's going to be a really tough task to try and get the goal. And I just wonder, I agree with you, I think Chelsea will win, but I just wonder if Montemurro will buck the trend and maybe set up slightly differently. and be defensive and not try and keep the ball and just, I wouldn't quite go route one, but know that Miedema is not going to get many chances and scoring against this Chelsea team is hard. And yeah, I just wonder if we'll see a defensive Arsenal. So what were you saying, Flo? What was your prediction on that one? Can we get a score from you?
I'm going to say 4-1 Chelsea.
Oof, brutal, brutal. I'm going to stick my neck out and say 1-0 Chelsea. And I think we might see a resolute Arsenal who sort of lose with dignity. Maybe they lost with dignity against United, but I think maybe they'll come out of this game with a little bit more respect than I think the United game has really had them kind of beaten by that press a lot. So yeah, that will finish off the women's football weekend on the Sunday. Anything else you want to highlight this weekend? Tell people to look out for, Flo?
Well, I guess the championship fixtures will come under the women's football weekend banner, but we're going to take a little break, aren't we? And then dive into the champ.
We're going to dive right in.
A bit, you know, I don't give the FA a lot of praise, but I will say staggered kickoffs. We've been calling for it. The people have been crying out for it. We've been protesting in the streets about staggered kickoffs. And the FA gave the
people...
Oh,
that's what that protest was. Now
yeah, I forgot to tell you, sorry.
Yeah, it went right by my house.
I know, I'm so sorry. And we got it. And thank you so much. It's going to be back to back to back to back. And that's what we want. We want to be able to watch everything. We don't want to have 8 windows up at once to catch all the games. So
shout out to my 8
shout out to my
tabs.
Safari browser.
Yeah. All right, we're going to catch our breath and we'll be right back with the FA Women's Championship. Always like doing a little differently on that one. So the FA Women's Championship is, as we've said very often this season, is extremely tightly contested. And this weekend we'll see a top of the table clash with Sheffield United playing Durham. And we haven't quite seen it confirmed, listeners, but I'm pretty sure this game will be on the FA Player if you want to check it out at 2 p.m. on Sunday, 9 a.m. on the East Coast of America. So do keep an eye on this because it's going to be great. Apart from that table, or including that tabletop clash, Flow, what should we be looking out for in the People's League?
I think Blackburn Rovers Liverpool is an interesting game. Blackburn are currently in 6th, Liverpool in 3rd, separated by 5 points, and Liverpool have been a little bit up and down, a little bit inconsistent. Probably not. Well, they would probably, you know, they'd want to be top by a fairly decent gap at the moment. And it's about how they grow. And also the London Bees Lewis game. London Bees beat Lewis in the Conti Cup. So that's interesting.
Bees are bottom of the championship as
Bees
well.
Bees are bottom of the championship. They've got 3 points to their name, just the one win. Lewis, who are doing so well.
1-0 experts. They love a 1-0.
They love a 1-0. They're in 5th place currently with 11 points. But they lost to London Bees in the Conti Cups. That could be an interesting one. It could be a real surprise upset on the cards. So those are my sort of 2 other picks. I know you love a bit of Leicester City. So
I love me some Foxes. I was quite excited for this one because it almost kind of, well, I suppose Leicester's really East Midlands. It's borderline Midlands derby. Not that I'm from the Midlands, so I really have the right to say that. But going off the troll comment section from Coventry Villa. But I thought this might be quite a good game, but having watched Coventry United midweek, I do worry about them getting turned over by Leicester. But I'm quite excited to see the Leicester project continue to surge in the FA Women's Championship. So I'll be cheering on a Leicester win and keep an eye on more Lashante Paul fabulous goals in that one.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And Leicester's always good value for a stream, so I'm sure they'll put the stream up somehow. They love a bit of a stream.
Yeah, I know Lewis is streaming their Conti Cup game next week during the week, so keep an eye on that. And I think they're doing a private, like they're hosting the stream for the next round of fixtures, not this weekend. But I know Lewis, do check in locally. Like I said, Coventry United did their stream last night. So some of these teams are really doing a good job of keeping you involved and keeping you curious. And if you have anything about the FA Women's Championship, if you're an FA Women's Championship fan that you want me and Flo to cover, or you feel like we're not doing this league justice, do get in touch. I think we both care about it, right, Flo?
I care about it. I will be completely honest. There's lots of teams that I don't know a lot about.
Yeah.
So I would really like to find out a bit more. Also, I don't know, I've been in touch with the wonderful Stu Barker, who runs Since 71 blog, which is focused on the Championship and below, a lot of National League as well. And there's lots of teams there that he's really passionate about, because those leagues don't, and those clubs don't get a lot of coverage. But also, if there's any siblings that are playing in the Championship that we should know about, please let us know, because we'd love to chat to them.
We love football, but siblings is arguably even more exciting.
Exactly. And then we'd also, you know, in turn, find out a bit more about them and their clubs, because I do think, obviously, WSL dominates everything. It's like the Premier League dominates everything, but it'd be really great to be able to find out a bit more about the Championship and some of the clubs, especially those that aren't connected to big men's teams, because they obviously draw a lot of the coverage.
Yeah, and Coventry United and Durham and London Bees and London City, I guess, are the outliers in that respect. Lewis are kind of an interesting one because they are connected to a men's team, but obviously it's only a National League men's side, so, you know, it's not the same as a Charlton or a Leicester or Sheffield, Blackburn, Liverpool, etc. So yeah, I think it's a fascinating league in that respect, because you do have these different ways of running a club, from Leicester, who have kind of professionalized overnight and suddenly look like real challengers, and then teams like Lewis that go for the mixed budget equality kind of system, which obviously is reaping its own kind of rewards from a grassroots level and upwards. You know, we'll see what happens in time there. So I think it's a fascinating league for the culture of the game and seeing where we are as a nation, as a sport. And like you said, I think it's, you'd be remiss to just focus on the WSL all the time and see that as the only way of judging kind of the women's game and our country or the sport as a whole around the world. So I think we love the FA Women's Championship for what it represents. And from what I've seen, which, like I said, is mostly Lewis, Leicester and Liverpool, I'd say the teams I've watched the most, the quality is always fantastic. And the games are really, really worth a watch. Any other business flow before we wrap up this Women's Football Weekend pod? There's been the usual, what should we call it? Shitstorm at the Football Association, the one and only.
Yeah, wouldn't be, you know, a week in the world without it. It's been a difficult week for people who work there. I mean, just clangor after clangor, literally.
I mean, we've had about 10 years, or at least dating back to Mark Sampson, at least 3 years of this.
Yeah. But we obviously spoke about the FA Cup suspension during lockdown. We spoke about the closure of academies, girls' academies, which was obviously very frustrating. The FA also released a new diversity plan that excluded specific reference to disabled people and how they were going to push to get more disabled people at the FA. And then Greg Clark appeared at a select committee in the UK and said about five offensive things in the space of about 20 minutes. And I think everyone was very frustrated. Lots of people called for him to resign or be fired, and he actually resigned.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Streamgate.
You know what I mean?
It was an outrage. People said it was an outrage, and we got immediate results. So
I think the frustrating thing is, and I, you know, someone made this point to me yesterday on Twitter, and I completely agree with them, is that he was allowed to resign. And I'm not going to go through what he said. You can find out. You can watch the whole thing back on Parliament Live if you want. Great website. We can watch all the UK Parliament committees and streams. I won't go through what he said. But someone made a good point to me that he resigned on his own terms. He got to release a statement talking about how great the work he's done at the FA has been and how he was going to quit soon anyway. So that's frustrating, because we want to see a little bit more condemnation of these things,
accountability, like at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, none of us probably thought he was even going to leave, so the fact that he's leaving is a small tiny bit of progress in this fight against people like him in not just the sports industry but in powerful institutions in general. So I think we have to celebrate these small wins, but oh my god, is there a lot of work to do, and there's obviously others in that organization that need to change. But you know, Greg Clark's been responsible for a lot of ills there. He was there when the FA tried to squash Enea Luko's racism case, and that should have been a sackable offense in itself. But we need to see more accountability like this. And I think, you know, massive credit needs to go to people at the FA who are working so hard to make change, people who are always fighting at these organisations making change, charities like Kick It Out and other people within the football sector, as well as those who brought the Black Lives Matter movement over to the UK and into sport as well, and players in the game who've been raising their voice and shouting about this and making a point, because without that message, I don't think there would have been the pressure for him to resign like there has been in the last couple of days. I think that played a massive factor. The narrative and conversation switched now to people caring more about these issues than they have previously in the last few years is massive. And that's why I think it's a big moment. But it's only the beginning and there's lots more work to do. But yeah, some bloody week for those that work at the FA. But I just really hope it's a sign of positive things to come. And also, in other news, girls' academies, if they can meet elite protocols, will stay open. However many can meet them is debatable. We both think that those that are linked to Premier League clubs will potentially be able to meet it. Brighton have already said that they'll try and meet it. It's about being able to bring a doctor and follow those medical protocols that you need to be able to operate. So that's the other update. But yeah, and also, actually, sorry, one more thing. I know you're about to say something, but Susie Rack's written a great piece about the Football Supporters Association in the UK, a fantastic organisation, and their new sort of women's fan board that they brought together. It's on the Guardian website, but that's another great positive thing that's happening, because the FSA are a really great organisation. Over to you.
I was just going to add on, it touches off perfectly from that point. Just go and read Maggie Murphy writes their thoughts, the Lewis GM. Writes their thoughts on their website, and Maggie's put together some really interesting things about the idea of what is an elite academy, and part of that comes down to the education and schooling that the academy offers versus like if it's an extracurricular activity. And so when you look at these aspects of like what is elite, you know, why are women not playing football and why are girls not playing football when boys are, it's related to so many other aspects of the opportunities we give to young children and young girls across the board, and where that funding is. So this is obviously the tip of the iceberg and a lot of inequality, and she's written about it very eloquently. So do go check out that article as well. Well,
wow, what a way to end it.
Ending it just trying to change the world. So thank you, listener. And
no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. Do go and make minor changes to the world by reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars makes the world go round, and some nice words too. You can follow us on Twitter at Relatively Foot, Instagram Relatively Football, and you can email us at relativelyfootball@gmail.com. Flo, I think that's it. Give my love to London. I was watching a bit of the new TV show Industry, which I recommend to everyone on BBC and HBO in America, and it takes place in London. I was getting very nostalgic seeing all the nice glitzy depressing shots of East London finance.
Yeah, great plug there. I wonder why you enjoyed it so much. Not because a family member is in the show or anything.
No.
It's our civic duty.
Big fan of interesting, dark dramas revolving around London.
Always.
Always. All right. You have a good day or night wherever you are, listener. And we'll speak to you again soon. Cheers.